2400 hours. The sunset comes through the open chapel window and bathes the altar, the crudely carved chalice and me in light. The wind from the cleft rises in the last such chorus that, with luck and God's mercy, I will ever hear.
That is the final entry, said Lenar Hoyt.
When the priest quit reading, the six pilgrims at the table raised their faces toward him, as if they were awakening from a common dream. The consul glanced upward and saw that Hyperion was much closer now, filling a third of the sky, banishing the stars with its cold radiance.
I arrived some 10 weeks after I had last seen Father Duray, continued Father Hoyt. His voice was a hoarse rasp. More than 8 years had passed on Hyperion. 7 years since the last entry in Father Duray's journal.
The priest was visibly in pain now. His face paled to a sick luminescence and filmed with perspiration.
Within a month I found my way to Paracebo Plantation, upriver from Port Romance, he continued, forcing some strength into his voice. My assumption was that the fiberplastic growers might tell me the truth, even if they would have nothing to do with the consulate or home rule authorities. I was right. The administrator at Paracebo, a man named Orlandi, remembered Father Duray, as did Orlandi's new wife, the woman named Sempha, whom Father Duray mentioned in his journals. The plantation manager had tried to mount several rescue operations onto the plateau, but an unprecedented series of active seasons in the flame forests had made them abandon their attempts. After several years, they had given up hope that Duray or their man Tuck could still be alive. Nonetheless, Orlandi recruited two expert bush pilots to fly a rescue expedition up the cleft in two plantation skimmers. We stayed in the cleft itself for as long as we could, trusting to terrain avoidance instruments and luck to get us to Bikura country. Even with bypassing most of the flame forest that way, we lost one of the skimmers and four people to Tesla activity.
Father Hoyt paused and swayed slightly. Gripping the edge of the table to steady himself, he cleared his throat and said,
"There's little else to tell. We located the Bikura village. There were 70 of them, each as stupid and uncommunicative as Duray's notes had suggested. I managed to ascertain from them that Father Duray had died while trying to penetrate the flame forest. The Bestos pouch had survived, and in it we found his journals and medical data."
Hoyt looked at the others a second time and then glanced down.
"We persuaded them to show us where Father Duray had died. They had not buried him. His remains were badly burned and decomposed, but complete enough to show us that the intensity of the Tesla charges had destroyed the cruciform, as well as his body. Father Duray had died the true death. We returned the remains to the Paracebo plantation, where he was buried following a full funeral mass."
Hoyt took a deep breath.
"Over my strong objections, M. Orlandi destroyed the Bikura village, and a section of the cleft wall with shaped nuclear charges he had brought from the plantation. I do not believe that any of the Bikura could have survived. As far as we could tell, the entrance to the labyrinth and the so-called basilica also must have been destroyed in the landslide. I had sustained several injuries during the expedition, and thus had to remain at the plantation for several months before returning to the northern continent and booking passage to Pachim. No one knows of these journals or their contents, except M. Orlandi, Monsignor Edouard, and whichever of his superiors Monsignor Edouard chose to tell. As far as I know, the Church has issued no declaration relating to the journals of Father Paul Duray."
Father Hoyt had been standing, and now he sat. Sweat dripped from his chin, and his face was blue-white in the reflected light of Hyperion.
"Is that all?"
asked Martin Silenus.
"Yes," managed Father Hoyt.
"Gentlemen and lady," said Hetmastine, "it is late. I suggest that you gather your luggage and rendezvous at our friend the consul's ship on Sphere 11 in 30 minutes or sooner. I will be using one of the tree's dropships to join you later."
Most of the group was assembled in less than 15 minutes. The Templars had rigged a gangway from a work pier on the interior of the sphere to the ship's top-tier balcony, and the consul led the way into the lounge as crew clones stowed luggage and departed.
"A fascinating old instrument,"
said Colonel Cassad, as he ran one hand across the top of the Steinway.
"Harpsichord?"
"Piano," said the consul. "Pre-Hegira. Are we all here?"
"Everyone except Hoyt,"
said Braun Lamia, as she took a seat in the projection pit. Hetmastine entered.
"The Hegemony warship has granted permission for you to descend to Keats Spaceport,"
said the captain. He glanced around.
"I will send a crew member to see if M. Hoyt needs assistance."
"No,"
said the consul. He modulated his voice.
"I'd like to get him. Can you tell me the way to his quarters?"
The tree ship captain looked at the consul for a long second, and then reached into the folds of his robe.
"Bon voyage,"
he said, handing over a wafer.
"I will see you on the planet, sometime before our midnight departure time from the Shrike's temple in Keats."
The consul bowed.
"It was a pleasure traveling within the protective branches of the tree, Hetmastine,"
he said formally. Turning to the others, he gestured.
"Please make yourselves comfortable in the lounge or the library on the deck below this. The ship will see to your needs and answer any questions you might have. We will depart as soon as Father Hoyt and I return."